Hello and welcome to another Innovation Forum webinar with me, Ian Welsh. Today we are looking again at the future of food and agricultural production, and in particular the trends in sustainable agriculture that might be able to make impact at scale. We know that we need to increase food production rapidly to provide for the world's growing population, and the intensification of agricultural production has been done so on a large scale, requiring high use of natural resources, including water, energy, land and soil. Now, the resulting impact on the environment has been significant, but for long-term food security, we need agricultural production to be sustainable. But how can it be? And how can agriculture's impact be aligned with the critical 2 degrees centigrade 2020 climate goals? So, over the course of the next hour, we are going to discuss how conventional agricultural can be more sustainable, and we have three expert panelists to help lead our debate. We have Duane Martin, the Corn Product Manager with Syngenta. We have Betsy Hickman, Vice President, Stakeholder Engagement and Implementation at Field to Market, and Paul Bertels, Vice President, Production and Sustainability with the National Corn Growers Association. And my thanks to my Innovation Forum colleague, Ailey Morrison, for convening our panel and organizing this webinar. Thank you also to Syngenta for sponsoring. Now, the issues we'll be covering now will form part of the discussion at our Innovation for Sustainable Agricultural Forum at the Pew Center in Washington, D.C. next month on March 22nd and 23rd. The web address is on your screen, and full details are on Innovation Forum's website, where you can sign up this week for a special rate. Back to today, I will shortly invite our panelists to make some opening remarks to help frame our debate. After some follow-up discussion, we will then move into a period of Q&A in the second half of our hour. We want the session to be as interactive as possible, so please do submit your questions using the comments box on the webinar dashboard, and I will put them to our panel. If you keep your questions short, they're much more likely to be used. Please also note, everybody, that there will be no slides. This is a structured panel discussion throughout. So, there we are, and here we go. Duane from Syngenta, would you be able to kick things off by outlining some of the key trends you're seeing gaining traction and what you're doing with your customers to get to grips with the challenges of properly sustainable agriculture? Duane, over to you.
Yes, Ian, thanks very much, and thanks to those joining us on the webinar today. Interesting topic for discussion, and one that we believe is certainly important and worthy of a global effort within Syngenta. We do see some areas of challenge, but also some areas of great potential, and some technologies currently being scaled certainly within North America, but also some of these same technologies being applicable to other parts of the world and certainly to smallholders around the world as well. So let's think about a couple of these as food for thought for the rest of our discussion. One would be better land use management. Certainly a couple of different aspects here of first growing more on a finite area, in other words, increasing yield with sustainable inputs and realizing that the capital required to supply those inputs to produce increased yield is limited as well. The second would be accessing and improving global access to existing data and future data, which is being compiled at just an astronomical pace. So let's think about those just briefly in a couple of introductory thoughts. First, on better land use management. In many cases, we tend to dismiss increased yield as an old school thought, pertaining only to very intensive monoculture systems. But if we look at it the right way, it's really increasing our efficiency with every bushel or ton that we increase on a given area, as long as we're paying special attention to the inputs needed to do that and the way those inputs are supplied. One of the areas where I believe some real advancements have been made is in using our breeding databases and the new breeding tools that are available to agriculture to improve crop ability to manage what we call abiotic stress, and that is stress to the plant that's not caused by a living organism, a weed, an insect, or a disease. So this is the too hot, too cold, too wet, too dry that producers everywhere deal with. And there have been some real strides made with both genetic modification and native trait technologies that allow plants to, for example, use water much more effectively, allowing the grower to increase yields and see increased consistency of yields across variable conditions and year over year. So these technologies hold some real promise, I believe, both on highly productive areas where we want to see increased yield, and also in some of our more fragile ecosystems, agroecosystems, where we want to pay special attention to low impact production. Secondly, when we think about the use of data, and realize these two topics are closely interconnected, we've got some extensive databases in genetics and in historical weather data, soil types, soil mapping, and then with the use of satellite imagery, for example, we now have access to a new world of data that can visualize crop conditions, can map weed and disease infestations, but we don't have a good format or forum to use those data. In other words, when we deliver these results to growers, sometimes they're simply not aware of or don't know what to do with that level of data. So we're beginning to use the volume of data we have in a much more effective fashion. First, to harness the power of these databases to direct our crop breeding efforts to better predict what genetic backgrounds will perform in different environments around the world, producing better seeds for virtually any production environment. Secondly, we're also getting much better at delivering actionable data and recommendations to our farmer customers in helping them place those better hybrids or varieties where they need to be on the right soils and the right conditions so that they can optimize their production as well. So these are just two areas of many where I believe there are great strides being made in agriculture, with some special attention being paid to the effects of a changing climate, to finite resources, to sustainability of production systems. And I see some great potential there. So with that, let me end my comments. We'll turn it over to another panelist and continue the discussion.
Just a quick question for me, Duane. I wonder, just could you give us a little bit of insight into the challenges you see from your customers getting to grips with these new technologies? Is there a sort of reluctance to see the benefits, do you think, or what? How has that changed? How are your customers altering their perception of the benefits of taking on the, you know, big data's benefits, for example?
Well, I think in large part it's a matter of how it's presented to the farmer customer. In other words, we've seen situations where we present them with an overwhelming amount of data, for example, satellite imagery maps that are very difficult to interpret, and the question from the growers that I interact with is that this is very impressive. It looks like it would be valuable to me, but what do I do with it? What decision will I make, or what production change will I employ because of these data? So I think it's incumbent on us in the industry, and obviously allied groups within agriculture, to collect the data, conduct the right analyses, and present it to the farmer such that there's a clear decision to be made. So in other words, as we develop better crop hybrids and varieties for variable conditions and an accompanying database that shows where those different finished hybrids or varieties will fit the best and how to most effectively employ them on the farm, that gives the farmer an actionable tool. He or she can look at data that actually means something. I know now that this water-optimized corn hybrid may fit best on this area of my farm that has highly variable soil types and is under water stress virtually every growing season versus this area of my farm that has a very deep topsoil, is highly productive, and perhaps is an area where I want to push my yields higher each year without that continued concern for water stress. So I think where we present it correctly, farmers are very adaptable and very anxious to improve and optimize production.
Great. Thanks very much indeed, Dwayne. Paul, from the NCGA, this is probably a good time to bring you in. You represent over 40,000 U.S. farmers. So can you give us now some insight into how focused your members are on developing sustainably and the sort of technology that you are seeing coming on stream to help them, moving on from what Dwayne's just said? Now, I should say, listeners, that Paul is actually dialed in from an airport lounge, so there may be some background noise, but don't be alarmed that it is fine because he's at an airport lounge. But anyway, welcome, Paul.
Thank you very much, Ian, and I will apologize again to your listeners. I am in an airport. I'll do my best to try and cover up whenever I hear an announcement coming, and I should also apologize. I've been told I have a bit of a southern accent, so if I say something that doesn't make any sense, I'll try and put it in English. As Ian mentioned, I'm with the National Corridors Association. We represent over 42,000 farmer members throughout the United States. And, you know, our organization, you know, we don't give farmers agronomic advice. We don't give them legal advice. What we try and do is represent their interests, and we also try and make sure that they have the tools available that they need to be a productive ag system. Recently, NCGA just redid our strategic plan, and with that, you know, our new vision is to sustainably feed and fuel a growing world. At NCGA, we kind of view sustainability, you know, it's really not a destination, but sustainability is really a journey. And, you know, our goal is that continuous improvement over time. But when we talk sustainability, you know, there are two main components. Of course, there's the environmental aspect or environmental sustainability that most people, you know, think of. But equally as important is the economic sustainability, because if our farmers are not profitable, you know, they're not going to continue to improve their production practices. But from NCGA's standpoint, you know, sustainability, and particularly with American agriculture, is especially dependent on technology, you know, be it precision ag, some of the things that Dwayne had just mentioned, but also things like GMOs, and, you know, as we're going to see here in the very near future, gene editing. But also, you know, we are reliant, and sustainability is reliant on the continued use of crop protection products. You know, each one of these tools is equally important. But, you know, as we look forward towards some of our environmental goals, you know, we try and break it down simply into clean air, clean water, and healthy soil. And by clean air, we mean, you know, we need to do things to clean up the air here in America and the world. And one of the best tools we see for that is actually biofuels. You know, they have a lower carbon footprint. You know, they reduce particulate matter, all those things. So we are very committed to cleaning the air through biofuels, and especially ethanol. When we talk about clean water, you know, what we want to continue to see is, you know, continue the gains that we've made against soil erosion over the last 40 to 50 years. We're going to keep that going. But in addition, and ever more important now, is increasing our nutrient efficiency. You know, we put down nutrients, fertilizers, to make our crops grow. Those things all have a cost. To be profitable, you know, we have to make sure the nutrients we put down are there for the crop to use and not leaving the field. And finally, as we continue to build healthy soils, and also increase carbon sequestration through the plants, you know, we really do believe corn is a solution to decreasing the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere. To that end, one of the projects that we started about 4 years ago now is called the Soil Health Partnership, and that's a series of demonstration farms where we get farmers to take field-scale experiments and look at things that would improve the soil's health, be it you know, organic matter, aggregate stability, water holding capacity, all of those things. And then as they use, you know, maybe cover crops or nutrient management schemes to do that, to bring in their farmer neighbors and demonstrate this. And that way, what we've always known here in the States is farmers learn best by watching what other farmers do. So with that, I will go ahead and hand it back over to you, Ian, and look forward to any questions.
Thank you very much, Paul. Again, a question that I asked to Dwayne, so similar sort of question, really. How are you seeing your farmer members, their attitudes changing towards sustainability and moving away from it being a cost and a challenge to actually an opportunity to really develop their businesses and in a more profitable direction? How are you seeing that changing?
Well, you know, we've come through a period where, you know, farming was incredibly profitable from about 2008 through 2013. You know, and farmers expanded their operations at those times. Now what we're seeing is, you know, as commodity prices fall, you know, farmers have to be more focused on both, you know, cost containment. And one of those things, and that's some of the promises of precision agriculture, is, you know, we can be more precise with the nutrients we're putting down and, you know, ultimately helping our profitability.
Okay, great. Thanks very much. Betsy from Field to Market, maybe I can turn to you now. I wondered, could you perhaps open things out a little and consider the challenges for the entire agricultural value chain? And thinking more particularly about, you know, why is collaboration across industries so vital? What can companies at each stage of the value chain do to collectively progress? So, Betsy Hickman, over to you. Betsy, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me? Sorry, I think
yes,
my
no
line
problem,
was
Betsy.
Good.
No problem. Right,
all
Betsy.
Right, wonderful.
Thank you, Ian.
Sure. Pleasure to be with you all today. And, you know, as our other esteemed panelists have shared, the challenge of how we feed, clothe, and transport a world of 9 billion people, really by 2050, while also conserving our planet's finite natural resources, has become increasingly complex. We're seeing the challenges of a changing climate with more erratic and volatile weather patterns, with the knowledge that there's increasing demand for food fiber and fuel from a growing and more affluent global population, and the knowledge that agriculture depends upon finite natural resources. And so finding science-based solutions to sustainable food production is a complex and difficult task, one that requires collaboration and cooperation across the full food and agriculture value chain. And so Field to Market's perspective, one of the key steps is defining the sustainability framework, the definitions, the indicators, the metrics for sustainable agriculture that we can use collectively to measure our continuous progress. And so a pivotal solution to meeting this challenge is how we unite the supply chain in a proactive pursuit to encourage measured, science-based continuous improvement of sustainable agriculture at both the field and landscape level. And so we need to be able to identify what works well, what is working even better, and where do we still need to go. And so at Field to Market, the Alliance for Sustainable Agriculture, we're working to do just that. We are collaborating with our members to catalyze and promote environmental and productivity improvements and establishing goals and broadly applicable metrics to engage and enable stakeholders across that full value chain to deliver sustainable outcomes for agriculture. As we've heard from our panelists today, thanks to the adoption of conservation practices and technology like precision agriculture, farmers across the United States have already made great strides over the past several decades to create more efficient production systems. But to continue to improve the sustainability of the food and agriculture sector, we need collaboration across the full value chain, from farmers to agribusinesses, to food, fiber, restaurant, and retail companies, to conservation groups, universities, and government around a common definition of sustainability and around the key metrics needed to measure our collective progress. And so our efforts at Field to Market seek to unite the supply chain, bringing together more than 120 members from all corners of the supply chain to offer U.S. commodity producers the ability to assess field-scale performance against 8 different sustainability indicators. And those include things like land use efficiency, soil erosion, soil carbon, irrigation water use efficiency, water quality, energy efficiency, greenhouse gas emissions, and biodiversities. The resulting field print analysis that a farmer receives allows them to estimate their sustainability performance, to test different management scenarios, and to compare their sustainability performance against local, state, national averages. And increasingly, we're seeing growing interest from downstream companies to measure continuous improvement of on-farm practices and track regional outcomes utilizing these common metrics developed through a multi-stakeholder consensus-driven process. And so working together through on-the-ground projects, both farmers and the supply chain are helping to tell the story of sustainable food, fiber, and fuel production while identifying opportunities for continuous improvement. And these supply chain partnerships are critical to enabling these downstream brands and retailers to deliver against their very public targets on improved environmental outcomes, and more importantly, to share the results of these efforts, the story of how farmers are working to protect water, air, soil, habitat, and a way of life for generations to come. And this is increasingly important, I think, for us to focus on collectively as a broader food and agriculture industry as we look at increasing trends specifically around changing tastes. So we've seen research from groups like Cone Communications and Nielsen on the changing buying behaviors or preferences of a growing consumer segment of the millennial generation. And so these consumers are considering sustainability when buying food. They're looking for more options on store shelves that help protect the environment. And also these consumers are looking to support both brands and products that align with their values. And so they're willing to vote with their wallets, with 6 out of 10 millennial consumers willing to pay more for environmentally friendly products. And so while the challenges facing agriculture, as we've heard today, elements like how do we adapt to a changing climate, how do we efficiently manage the finite natural resources that agriculture depends on, these are challenges that are bigger than any one organization can tackle alone. But at Field to Market, we believe that collaboration among stakeholders through an industry-wide dialogue that's grounded in science, that's open to the full range of technology choices, can create opportunities across the agricultural value chain to promote sustainable agriculture, which our world needs for a sound future.
Thank you very much indeed, Betsy. Quick question for me. You talked about how there's been change, businesses being taking more interest in their supply chains. I'm wondering, where have you seen, where in the value chain has the impetus come for change? Has it been across the board, or are there any particular parts of the value chain where you think the real impetus has come from?
Sure. I think the increasing questions that both consumers and investors and stakeholders are asking of branded companies, consumer product goods companies, are leading them to move their sustainability efforts beyond the four walls of their operations to then focus on the supply chain. And so with that, where's the opportunity to learn both mapping their supply chain, where are they sourcing from, what are the natural resource concerns of that region, and then how can they work together through collaboration with their supply chain, with suppliers, but more importantly, helping producers embark on that journey of continuous improvement. And I think Paul said it really well, sustainability is a journey, it's not a destination. And so how can we collectively harness the power of the value chain to help pull sustainability through the system, providing solutions to some of the challenges facing agriculture, whether that's water scarcity, water quality, adapting to a changing climate. And so with that, we've seen increasing response from a number of companies who are rolling up their sleeves, partnering directly with suppliers and producers to catalyze continuous improvement, partnering with producers on a multi-year a journey to really deliver increased sustainability outcomes that they can both translate into how they're measuring and reporting out against their very public targets on improved environmental outcomes, but also share those efforts with consumers, with investors, with broader stakeholders who are asking questions on how, where, and how food is produced and where that's being sourced.
Thanks very much. A quick word to our audience. Thank you very much for the questions that have been coming through. Please do keep sending them in. We'll be coming to those very shortly. I'd like to put a question of my own to the panel. Betsy, you were talking about the kind of ideas of continuous improvement as part of the journey of sustainable sustainability for agriculture. But in particular, what does this look like in practical terms? I mean, we all talk about it'd be great to have a more sustainable future is what everyone's working towards. But perhaps you can give us an example of what, in concrete terms, that looks like. Can you give us one good example of how that a business can address this in concrete terms and get on with it?
Sure. So one example that I can share with you all today, example of what we call a field print project at Field to Market, which is the opportunity for our members to come together in a specific geography around a specific crop or a set of crops, really partner with producers on that journey of continuous improvement. And so in this example, I'll share Unilever. As they began to map their supply chain, they have a corporate sustainability commitment of sustainably sourcing all of their raw materials and ingredients by 2020. And so as they looked to the United States, they were able to realize that soy was their number one commodity by volume. And so mapping their supply chain, they discovered that for several of their brands, there were significant opportunities. For instance, their Hellmann's mayonnaise brand, nearly 100% of the soybean oil used to produce that Hellmann's mayonnaise was coming from the crush facility of one of their suppliers in Iowa, ADM. And so they've been working together in collaboration with their supplier to engage producers now. The project has been in the field for more than 4 years now. And so what that journey looks like is first helping producers understand where they're at. And so using that common sustainability measurement framework to help producers both understand where they're doing well and giving them the tools to tell that story, to translate some of the traditional stewardship and conservation efforts that producers across the country have been investing in for generations, but being able to frame that in a way that it connects with how they're protecting air, water, soil, and habitat. But more importantly, I think also identifying those opportunities for continuous improvement. And so by helping those producers benchmark their performance against both the state and national averages, but also their peer set. So looking at a more apples-to-apples comparison within the region, producers able to really drill down into what are the decisions that he or she may be making on his individual farm. Why is there potentially a producer in that same cohort who's using significantly less energy, who is realizing either sustained or increased yields using more efficient or optimized use of inputs. And so with that, achieving greater benefits for sustainability outcomes like soil conservation or water quality. And so with that, it opens up this discussion and dialogue that then with increased knowledge, connecting these producers with knowledge and insights as they head into that next growing season, they can begin to think about harnessing that data in such a way that can inform their decision making. And so that's the real opportunity is I think there's a lot of great work being done. The millions of decisions that are made every day by farmers is a real opportunity for us to advance continuous improvement. I think there's a lot of great work to build off of. In December, Field to Market released our third edition of our National Indicators Report, which if you're interested in taking a deeper dive across 10 different commodities, seeing really the state of the union, so to speak, and how producers are producing more with less. But I think it's important not to stop there and realizing that there are significant challenges facing agriculture. What's the opportunity for the value chain to partner together in examples like the one that I just shared from Unilever to really equip producers with the tools, resources, and knowledge they need to continue contributing solutions to some of the most pressing environmental challenges both facing agriculture and facing society.
Thank you very much, Betsy. That's a great introduction to that side of things. Dwayne, perhaps I can turn to you now. Could you just give us an example from your experience of what an initiative looks like, what a tool that people can use in practical terms looks like? Dwayne, over to you.
Certainly, Ian, and let's take the example of water use efficiency as one of the areas that I think we're all concerned with and would all agree that this is an area of focus for sustainability in the future. We've had a couple of initiatives with our grower customers that I believe have really yielded significant results in water use efficiency. Let's take an example from the western Great Plains of the U.S. In irrigated corn production. This is an area that is highly productive but uses water from the underground Ogallala Aquifer and in many cases areas of this portions of this aquifer have been drawn down a bit aggressively, and there's certainly some concern about the sustainability and longevity of this production system in the western United States. But through a couple of technologies, we've really delivered a much more sustainable and efficient production system. Let's examine two of those. One of the initiatives that I alluded to earlier is water-optimized corn hybrids. So we brand these as artesian corn hybrids. It's a unique technology utilizing state-of-the-art gene isolation and validation technologies to take native traits. These are naturally occurring traits in a corn plant that allow the corn plant to process water more effectively. We isolate these genes, then move them into the right genetic backgrounds to produce a finished corn hybrid that has multiple genes that allow the plant to respond to water stress more effectively regardless of when that water stress might occur during the growing season. So we essentially have a plant that from planting to harvest processes available water from the soil much more effectively. We then place that into what we call the Water Plus system, which is essentially a prescription production system utilizing state-of-the-art irrigation scheduling technology that tracks the crop's water use, schedules irrigation such that we're not over-applying irrigation water, but we're supplying it effectively according to the crop needs as it responds to heat, temperature, and natural precipitation in the environment. Couple that with the presence of the artesian corn hybrid on that irrigated ground, and we've got a system that delivers essentially the same yields with approximately 20% less water in a given growing season. So the technology in many cases is there in the marketplace, and as I mentioned earlier, it's up to us to compile these technologies in a usable form such that growers can manage these crops more effectively and see the immediate return. And as Paul said earlier, in many cases, sustainability to a farmer is the ability to keep farming profitably. Certainly, as we look at some of these sensitive areas, like the one I just described in the western U.S., it's also the need to sustainably farm those areas so that we can do this 20 years from now just as we're doing it today. So that's just one example of existing technology that's in the market today that's making a significant impact on water use efficiency.
Great. Thank you very much indeed, Dwayne. Paul, I'd like to turn to you now, and in fact just move the question along a little bit, and it's actually a particular question that's come from our audience. And Paul, how in practical terms should companies work with farmers so that the commitments that everyone agrees on are ultimately owned by the producers themselves, so that they are truly committed to them? So, Paul, I wondered if you could just explain a little bit about how you think that is best gone about.
Oh. Well, I guess, Ian, in particular when I think about working with companies and their goals, I think of like food companies, as Betsy mentioned earlier about Field to Market. NCGA was one of the founding members of that organization. And one of the things that we saw, and this is going back almost a decade, was more and more food companies were talking about sustainability goals and what they were going to potentially require farmers to do in their production processes. And, I have to admit, we looked at that with a little bit of fear because, we weren't really talking to those. So that's why we partnered with other companies to form Field to Market, so that it gave us that opportunity to talk to food companies and others about, what exactly does sustainability mean and what can we do to make sure our customers are happy with what we're producing. But I think specifically, and just to piggyback on something Dwayne and Betsy had said, is, one of the areas where we're putting a lot of emphasis right now is on nutrient management. And, how do we convince growers to, either move from, fall applied in certain parts of the country on nitrogen to, spring applied, ultimately to split season nitrogen application. So how do we get growers to do that? And part of that is, through working with companies like Dwayne's or the equipment companies on making sure farmers have those tools, but also, making sure as we go downstream we're talking to food companies and showing that these benefits are there for our growers.
Thank you. Thank you very much indeed, Paul. Again, to another question that's coming from our audience, again just moving things along a little bit. It's a question thinking about barriers to uptake. I wonder if Betsy, I can turn this to you. What do you think of the barriers to uptake or adoption of improved practices? And what is required to increase the urgency and to move beyond the abstract to the specific to deal with these problems? Betsy.
Great question, Ian. And I think the bias towards uptake, helping producers understand that there are opportunities by investing in sustainability, by considering how their management practices impact different sustainability outcomes. We've seen in several projects across the country where those producers with the greatest resource use efficiency, the greatest sustainability performance, also have the lowest cost of variable production. And so, we've heard our other panelists talk about, 2008, farming was a time of profitability. That's a different story that we're dealing with today as commodity prices have fallen. And so where are there opportunities, both through cost containment, but through operational efficiencies that farmers can begin to realize that through, adopting precision agriculture technology, applying the right resource in the right place, the right time, in the right form when it comes to things like nutrient management, can really help them give the fertility that's needed for that plant, but also ensure that that application is staying on field. And so as we think about things like increasing soil conservation to reduce nutrient loss from agricultural fields, the opportunities of building soil health and what that means across so many different sustainability outcomes. There are real opportunities there, I think, to increase not only the environmental stewardship and benefits, but also the productivity and profitability of other operations. And so that's something that Field to Market is really looking to collaborate with producer organizations across the country, with the supply chain to be able to really help educate producers on these opportunities and, really giving them the freedom to innovate, giving them, equipping them with the knowledge, insights, and resources needed to inform their decision-making processes, but also, opening up that opportunity for a dialogue and encouraging that innovation by you know, through adoption of technology, through adoption of conservation practices, and connecting them with those resources and knowledge partners.
Thanks very much indeed, Betsy. Dwayne, I wonder if you had any thoughts on the specific barriers to uptake and adoption of better practices, and you know, what do you use to, or you think are the best ways to increase the urgency?
I think, as the other panelists have stated, we have to go back to the basics and realize that, that growers are first and foremost business people, and they have to see a viable business model in front of them and see the benefits of advanced technology to their individual operations, to be enthused about adopting those and continuing to improve efficiency in their own operations. So I think that's first and foremost. It's once again incumbent on us in industry and certainly in allied organizations to present new technologies in a way that, that growers see the benefits and are certainly motivated to adopt those in their own operations. It, you know, a second area I think is just the very wide diversity in viewpoints on new technology, and one of those areas is genetically modified crops. There is such a wide range of views as far as new technologies like GM crops that it's sometimes difficult to get agreement across even agricultural organizations, and certainly then in a wider cultural sense as to whether these are appropriate technologies to use. Of course, the science may say one thing and the cultural aspects may say another, but these are certainly barriers and challenges to companies like Syngenta as technology suppliers, in that we need to see those trends that, that both Betsy and Paul talked about very descriptively. We need to see those in unfolding in society. We need to see regulatory systems around the globe developing to help farmers adopt those technologies. So in other words, if you know GM crops, for example, have brought tremendous increases in yield and crop protection capabilities and efficiencies to those areas where they've been adopted, but in some areas, we simply have either dysfunctional regulatory systems or disagreement as to the benefits of GM crops. I believe it would really help worldwide agriculture if we had a more congruous view of the benefits of technologies like GM technology and the ability to bring those to market in a much more a predictable fashion. I think we could make much more impact in a shorter period of time if we could advance some of these highly beneficial technologies in a more predictable, efficient way.
Obviously, we could have an entire two-day conference on GMOs and the pros and cons, but I mean, I think it's a very big and interesting point. I mean, I wonder just very quickly, could you give your view on how the congruous view that you mentioned around GMOs and other things, what's the route to achieving that in your view?
You know, I wish I had the right answer for you today, but I think it's really a challenge for us. If we look at the both the scientific data on the safety and effectiveness of GM crops, it's very clear they've added tremendous efficiency to the production systems where they've been adopted. Safety is really no longer a question. I believe I saw a calculation recently where over 3 trillion meals have now been consumed from GM crop products, and no one can even describe a negative effect or a negative mechanism that might be taking place either in human or animal health. So the science is very clear that these are beneficial technologies, but there really is a cultural aspect to the adoption of GM crops that continues to be, I believe, the major barrier to adoption. And, of course, some governments are simply responding to those cultural aspects of the argument. when they design or operate their regulatory systems. So I think we're seeing that patchwork emerge around the world. I continue to believe that as the global population and drive for better, more sustainable food production continues, that those areas will indeed see the benefits of many of these technologies and move to adopt them much more quickly.
Thank you very much indeed, Dwayne. I'd like to move it along a little bit from that this very point. I mean, technology such as development of GMO has enabled the debate in things around debate around biofuels to really move forward. And I know, Paul, it was something that you mentioned earlier. We have a question, which I think is a very good question from our audience, saying, you know, where do we think, or where does the panel think the debate or the line has to be drawn between agriculture focusing on feeding the world rather than fueling the world via biofuels, when there are other sustainable options around for energy, but really, you know, we only have one show in town in terms of food. So, Paul, you mentioned that you start in your opening comments. So what's your view, Paul, on the balance between fueling the world and feeding the world?
Well, I don't really see that there's a trade-off. You know, unfortunately, some of our opponents in the liquid fuel market, particularly the petroleum side of the house, you know, help prompt this concept of food versus fuel. And frankly, we've never seen that. We never bought into it. We always said food and fuel. I don't really think there's a trade-off, particularly when you use corn ethanol, for example. So you take a bushel of corn and you produce about 2.8 gallons of ethanol, which can go straight into the fuel system. In addition to that, there's about 17 pounds of DDGs, which is going to be a high-energy, high-protein animal feed that comes right back out. So really all you're doing is taking the starch portion of the corn. Now, looking forward, there's also the potential for, you know, cellulosic feedstocks out there. Really, some of the technology is still underway for that, but it's also a you know, question of is that economically viable source of feedstocks. But right now, I mean, you know, we're sitting here in America, we're sitting on top of about 2.5 billion bushels of excess corn right now. So, you know, I don't mean to be adversarial, but I have a little trouble grasping the idea that we're trying to somehow fuel our cars versus feed people when, you know, we have proven we can do both, and we can do both easily.
Sure, and I guess at the moment there's so much potential in production that both sides of the debate can be answered. You know, there's space for both.
Absolutely.
Great. Okay, well, thank you, Paul. Question for Betsy. Our questioner asks, in terms of overall agriculture use, what is the role of biodiversity and ecosystem services in sustainable agriculture and productivity? So, Betsy, what's your view on biodiversity and ecosystem services within developing agricultural productivity?
Filter markets perspective, biodiversity, I think, is crucial. I mean, there's lots of benefits that are provided to our agricultural ecosystems as a result of the natural flora and fauna. And so we've been working over the past really 18 to 24 months to pilot a biodiversity metric. And so helping farmers understand, looking at their entire farm operations, what are the decisions they make with regard to land management decisions that can help create a greater potential for habitat and thereby biodiversity to flourish. And so with that, beginning to open up some of those conversations around, you know, the opportunities that working land, such as agriculture, can contribute to helping improve and strengthen biodiversity across the country. And that's across, you know, looking at the opportunities that they can take from leaving wildlife corridors to thinking about elements such as buffer strips around waterways riparian areas, to thinking about opportunities with regards to you know, leaving less productive land to be available for habitat, and thinking about different management practices within their toolbox that can help biodiversity to flourish. So I think it's really important that increasingly, not only here in the United States, but globally, that as we seek to define sustainable agriculture, that biodiversity is a part of that equation.
Thanks very much. I guess it's all a question of balancing productivity and biodiversity and seeing them on the same page. Paul, I wonder if I could turn back to you with a specific question about data gathering. And the question really is about, what in your view is the way to best and most effectively gather data from farmers and demonstrate, and how that can be used then to demonstrate continuous improvement at the farm level. I wonder, Paul, from your experience with your members, what is the best way to effectively gather data at the farm level?
Well, data is a very interesting question for farmers, and I think Dwayne hit upon part of it earlier. It's one thing to have data, and we can produce reams and reams of it, but turning data actually into decision points is what is becoming the challenge for farmers now. Through ag companies, equipment companies, they're developing those tools, but it's like any other technology. Are the decision making ability keeping up with the ability to draw those tools? But, I guess another issue when specific to our growers, when we look at data, so be it, let's use our combine for example. So we're going through the field harvesting corn, that thing is constantly taking data on yield, moisture, things like that. A key question for farmers is who actually owns that data? I mean, because it is valuable. It's valuable to Dwayne and his company or his competitors to know what I as a grower am doing. It's valuable to some of the food companies that work with Betsy, to understand what farmers are doing. But, ultimately, everything that's happening within that field, including the data that's generated, belongs to me as the grower. So that's one of those things as we look, forward and, we look to our partners in industry developing these tools, it's, ultimately, I need that tool, but that data belongs to me.
And that's going to be very much data that you wouldn't necessarily want your neighbor across in the next field having access to.
Oh, absolutely, because, there is a friendly competition between farmers for land out there. And, if, not want to say we're doing something wrong, but if I was doing something not as efficiently as possible and my neighbor all of a sudden saw that that he could do something better than me, it's potential that he could go to the landlord and say, I can pay you a higher rent for that piece of ground just because he'd have access to my data. That's a hypothetical, but I don't believe it's beyond the realm of possibility.
Sure. Great. Thanks very much, Paul. Of course, increasing use of data enables an awful lot of things to be measured better, obviously. And one of these things I think is particularly important is around water use. And I know we mentioned water use earlier on in the opening remarks, but our next question is specifically asking what are the technologies that the panel see that are have the biggest promise for helping producers to manage their water resources better. Dwayne, I wonder if I could turn to you first. What technologies hold the biggest promise to help producers manage water resources?
Well, in our industry, I think you have to go back to genetics and the seed that we supply to farmers and that the farmer ultimately uses in his operation. So the ability of a crop plant to use available water more efficiently is probably the most basic water use efficiency system that we can employ in agriculture. Obviously, there are water-intensive production systems like flooded rice, for example. We can certainly work on the mechanical, cultural aspects of water use efficiency, but globally and across crop production systems, I think our emerging and developing ability to process genetic information more effectively and more quickly is going to lead to tremendous gains in water use efficiency. So as I mentioned earlier, we have some examples of this in the agricultural world today, and native trait technology such as Artesian corn hybrids, the promise of gene editing technology is just beginning to emerge, and I think that will again allow us to make some fairly significant strides in water use efficiency. But further back to the data question, I believe also using more traditional plant breeding techniques with a much better ability to collect crop, soil, weather data around the globe and utilize that in our breeding efforts will allow us to select the right genetics to place into finished hybrids and varieties, and then once again to be able to place the right genetics on the right piece of ground for the grower to use. So I believe that's the basis of water use efficiency. I think that's where we'll see the most gains over the next 20 years in sustainably affecting our water use in agriculture.
Paul, I'd like to bring you back in here as well. From the farmer's perspective, what do you see as the holding the biggest promise for helping producers manage water resources effectively? Quickly, if you would.
Yeah, well, I guess the first thing is just to remind your listeners that in the U.S., only 15% of the corn is actually irrigated, 85% is rain-fed. So we're not talking the vast majority of corn that needs this. But specifically to irrigation, I think Duane hit on a key is, you know, as we continue to get better at placing, varying our hybrids across fields, there's problems there, but I think also just from a mechanical standpoint, you know, there's new things coming out like drag lines off central pivots. So instead of a nozzle that's spraying water down, it's basically dragging the tube between the rows and water's getting put down that way. There's promise there. In addition, I think as we continue with data and mapping, you know, if there was a application or a way we could apply, variable rate watering across fields, because some portions of the field may have higher water holding capacity than others, so that you're not putting down a uniform amount, but putting down the amount that the crop needs at the right spot.
Okay, thank you, Paul. I'm conscious that we're coming towards the end of our time. I do want to ask one final question to the entire panel, and it's actually a question that's come up several times in different forms, but essentially the question is, what is the biggest trend in 2017 that we should watch out for? Betsy, could you give us your views very quickly, please, in a couple of sentences, the biggest trend that you think we're going to see this year?
I think the biggest trend that is going to require kind of collaboration, action from the entire value chain is the desire for increased transparency. And so with that, you know, in commodity supply chains, they're quite complex, and so being able often to have that full visibility from the farm, often growers sell in their grains and don't often know where that ends up. And then, food companies, brands, and retailers on the other side often, trying to map that back. And so where are the opportunities, to increase visibility without placing undue financial burden on the food and agriculture value chain to accomplish that, I think is going to be a really important trend. And so with that, there's a lot of data out there. How do we harness that in such a way that, growers feel confident in how that's being used, that they own that data? But also, how can that begin to help carry that sustainability story down downstream? And so really, I think transparency being a key important issue that we'll need the entire value chain to really rally around and address.
Thank you very much, Betsy. Duane, for you, what is going to be the biggest trend in 2017?
2017 and beyond, I think, and I think Betsy alluded to it as well, trust and confidence in food production, both in the aspects of safety and sustainability. And I know I, with a scientific background, we often go to the numbers first in helping people understand how we produce and supply food to the world marketplace. We need to continue to reinforce the fact that sustainability, safety, food security is important to all of us. It's a collective goal that we all work toward, And certainly we in industry need to continue and reinforce, redouble our efforts to help people understand the things that the industry is doing right today and will continue to improve on.
Okay, thank you, Dwayne. Paul, turning to you, last word. From a producer perspective, what's going to be the biggest trend in 2017?
Well, I think the challenge we're going to see in 17 is really going to be farm profitability. You know, commodity prices right now, most growers are at or below the cost of production. So, you know, if we're, as I stated in the beginning, if we're not economically sustainable, you know, environmental sustainability is going to suffer. So, you know, if we can get markets back to where farmers are profitable, you know, I think we'll continue to make the strides that we've been seeing over the last few years.
Great, Paul. Thank you very much indeed. Okay, I'm going to have to stop the discussion now as we are running out of time. I would like to thank our panel very much for their time and insight today. Once again, if you would like to continue to the debate on business innovation for sustainable agriculture, then please do join us in Washington next month. We'll send you a recording of this webinar so you can listen again at your leisure and share with your colleagues. We also welcome feedback, so please don't hesitate to contact any of us at Innovation Forum with any follow-up questions and comments. But for now, I hope you have found the past hour interesting. And thank you very much for listening.